No form is shown. Senator Victor Fisher and Senator Copper are excused because of their attendance in Anchorage at the Egan Memorial Services there. Senator Moss is absent. We have three measures to consider today, and I will start with CSHB 384. This is a bill to require the school district expenditures comply with the school district's written policies, that the yearly audit identify expenditures that are allowable or out of compliance with those policies, and mandate that the department, the rule mandates that the department adopt regulations to implement the section. The bill also prohibits payment for lobbying activities to a school employee in excess of salary, opens records on the term of employment of the school chief school administrator with copies submitted to the Department of Education, and requires school districts to submit settlement agreements before the termination of an administrator to the Commissioner of Education for review as comment prior to board action. Finally, the bill requires that money spent out of compliance with board policies will be returned to DOE following notice from the department. We have in file an amendment proposed by Senator Ferguson and a letter submitted by Senator Sackett concerning the Yukon-Koyukuk School District. The amendment by Senator Ferguson appears to reach a situation in one of the REAAs where the chief school administrator does not reside in or have his principal office within the geographical boundary of the school district. The letter Joe Cooper, district superintendent for the Yukon-Koyukuk School District, questions whether the opening of the superintendent's contract to the public is justified if other state employees, including legislative personnel, do not have their contracts available for public review also. He does approve of the proposal for an advisory requirement from the commissioner before the board pays off the superintendent on the contract. Okay, who's here to testify on 384? No one wants to talk about 384? All right, well, let's Senator Fisher now talk about it.
I don't mean to talk about it. No, I don't think too bad, Bill.
That's not that.
Okay. Let's go through the sectional analysis then. Section 1 adds a new subsection to the annual audit statute requiring that the audit identify expenditures as allowable or out of compliance with written school policies. And those written school policies, I take it, are found in Title 14. Maybe Mr. Manners can help me with this. They're school policies, statewide applicability, correct? Section 2 adds two new subsections to bylaws and administrative rules, requiring that the expenditures of a school district will conform to its bylaws and the department will adopt regulations in this section. Section 3 disallows school employees from earning money in addition to their salaries for lobbying activities. I would think they could compensate the employee for expenses.
Yeah, pocket. I would assume, too, I assume this means extra salary in addition to the teacher or employee salary.
If that makes sense. Section 4 adds two new subsections to the term chief school administrator, or to the chief school administrator statute, requiring the district to keep records in terms of employment of the administrator open to the public, assuring no objection to that, and to submit records of the terms of employment to the Department of Education. The commissioner would have an advisory role, but as I understand it, would not be able to veto a settlement, would only render advice. I don't know, but what's your view of that?
I don't have any problem.
Does it?
We're not going to address the university at all. This bill, are we?
384?
Talking. Okay.
We have another bill on the agenda. address the university?
No, just a comment. You know, I don't really have a hang-up with Chief Cole Administrator being paid off. I don't mean bought off, paid off. But I think it also, somewhere there ought to be open to the public as to President of the University, the benefits he gets, and when he leaves early, the retirement, et cetera, I think should be a matter of public scrutiny.
Now,
but that's not addressed here.
There's a letter in support of this bill from the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Supporting the bill. And Mr. Cooper of the Yukon Koyukuk also likes the advisory role in the superintendent is to be paid off. Is there any negative comment on the bill? Aside then, and Mr. Cole, maybe here. Mr. Mark?
Mr. Chairman, sorry I didn't recognize this bill right away, but could I give a few comments on it?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Terry Martin, representative for Utah Anchorage, one of your constituents. And as you were going along the bill, I finally recognized it in the sense that last year this bill came before the House Finance Subcommittee. I was appointed as a chairman for that subcommittee to rewrite this bill from its original intent. And as I talked to Mr. Mann on my left, I think that you brought up, I realized that he was a major sponsor of it. And what happened is that we had at least six or seven meetings on this last year with all the parties, the DOE, from the representatives of the teachers group, the employees group, and from the school superintendents. And it was a real good harmonious meeting that we had four or five times. And so the beginning of this year, we passed it out again as another priority in need. And I think it does answer many questions that DOE has had over the years and local school boards have had over the years with the peculiar problems. And it's a big step in the right direction that balances the needs and the concerns and the experiences that local boards are going through. And hopefully that DOE can give them better directions and help when they need it in establishing contracts. I would highly recommend this passage.
Okay, my only concern is, to some degree, the symbolic invasion of local prerogatives, in the sense that if the Anchorage District, which is quite sophisticated, wanted to buy out a portion of the superintendent's contract, they'd have to submit the matter to the commissioner in Juneau for comment, and there'd be a cooling off period, or whatever that is, in a couple months. I'm a little concerned about that. Is the trend, the tendency away from local control.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with you there. The tendency will be taken away. But this was from the bad experiences that a number of school boards have had in the heat of the emotion of whatever problem suddenly developed, how to get out of contact on both sides. And that even for the city of Anchorage, they didn't seem to mind this cooling off period, so that both parties would have an opportunity to talk to the lawyers, talk to the DOE, and so on. It's not mandatory, of course, that they would change the recommendation. It's just a good step for, because of the bad experience that new people on local boards have had. And hopefully this time period would act more as the cooling off period more than anything else.
What about... I hate to press you because you're my constituent.
That's okay.
But what about the...
Ball and his ball came together, sir.
Yeah. What about the matter of requiring the district to refund money if it made an expenditure in the previous fiscal year in violation of 14-14-100? In a district like the Yukon Koyukuk District, where there's no local effort, that might be very difficult to do.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that all local school districts have input and have guidance now through this bill of what is normal for a school district in expenditures. Plus, they can also say, our school district is a little different. We have these other peculiarities. So fine, and they agreed what the budget will be. DOE knows what the budget will be, and therefore they're allotted so much to the state legislature and so on. Then you suddenly find out that $100,000 went for this, $50,000 went for that, or we don't know what. At the end of the season, DOE in the past had no way of knowing what school districts were spending. They weren't up to date with the reports and so on. This is one way of controlling from the state legislators wanted, and if I remember right, in budget and audit recommended it, that there be some scrutiny of how districts spent their monies.
All right, thank you. Anything else?
Thank you, sir. I'm glad you brought it up. Good timing.
Yeah. And the bill, as I mentioned, is supported by the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Does anyone else wish to testify with us?
Mr. Chair, are you going to deal with the amendments?
Well, Senator Fisher and I are not in a position today, unless Senator Moss arrives, to deal with anything, but we might deal with the Ferguson amendment. Do you have a comment on that?
All right, just pick the
5 minutes in the Alaska. We're generally okay in the bill as it's constructed and agree with what it's trying to do. A general comment relative to the financial penalty, though, I think is appropriate. When the DOE is authorized to withhold funding, sometimes the effect of the withholding might not get at the problem that generated the need, and programs, students, and educational opportunity may suffer as a result of that. So if there's another option, and I don't have a good suggestion relative to that, but if there's another option that may be available so that there isn't that potential deprivation, we would encourage that it be considered. Perhaps the last amendment that is suggested by Senator Ferguson could simply require that the district office be geographically, as a matter of fact, within the boundaries of the district, as opposed to if they choose not to, there will be a financial penalty. And the only concept that I could suggest that may fit, and it may not fit, but we propose for consideration, is that there be an individual liability, fiscal liability, assumed by the elected officials when they knowingly operate outside the statutory requirements.
The Ferguson Amendment says add new subsection to what? Subsection? Page 2, line 9. Subsection F, but I don't see any subsection A through D. Maybe I do. Case of the Aleutian Chain District, the superintendent operates out of Anchorage. Again, I have mixed feelings about this because the Aleutian Chain is such a difficult place with no central community that is more accessible to really to any of the others from a communication standpoint than Anchorage. And if they're getting into things like the administrator's ability to interview candidates for employment, deal with suppliers and providers and state officials, it may actually be that Anchorage is a good location for them.
Yeah. That's less of our concern. Our primary concern, as I try to say, would be that if there's going to be a penalty for some violation, we would encourage we try to find options other than withholding the potential financial support for programs and educational opportunity.
The only thing is that the penalty arises if you don't spend the money in accordance with your own local policies as they are prescribed by bylaw, so that it should be possible for every district to comply with its own bylaws. I have your concern, but it's not as though there's an entrapment where if they don't comply with some obscure regulation or rule of the Board of Education in Juneau, they're going to get called on for refund. This is their own local bylaw that they can make as simple or complicated as they want to. It seems like to me. have any reaction to that?
It seems to me they should be able to do that.
I agree with that. Thank you.
Right.
Anyone else want to be heard on 384? All right, if not, we've learned something and we'll put it aside. Let's go on then to Hospital 354 amended, requiring the hospital to notify the state medical board of any physician whose privileges are revoked. This issue was addressed in the Medical Practice Act bill passed in 1983, but Hospital 354 would add this requirement to the duties of hospitals under AS 1820. The original sponsor, Representative Conan, participated in the draft of a committee substitute, which would give the hospital 10 working days to notify the state medical board and require notice only when privileges are denied for more than 30 days. Is there anyone here to speak on 354? Senator Fisher, it'd be my intention to circulate the committee substitute.
Yes, I am.
I think it's a good idea, and the state medical board ought to be informed if the hospital has revoked a physician's privileges for more than 30 days. Finally, House Bill 466, the bill would enable the university to receive and expend funds such as tuition receipts without waiting for legislative approval. Also, this would apply to federal funds, which now must be approved by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee under the procedure where we allow the university to receive and expend money. The bill would also allow the university to carry over funding for organized research into the next fiscal year and file a statement on the amount of funds carried over with the Department of Administration. And Representative Martin, you're the sponsor of House Bill 466, and you'd like to be heard.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Rebecca, my name is Terry Martin.
Are you still living in my district?
Yes, sir. One year I can stay convinced. Exactly, sir. Mr. Chairman and members, this bill developed out of a concern that for the past 3 years, the legislative through intent on the university budget has been saying that we will allow the university with its organized research monies, we will allow tuition monies, we will allow grants to come to them during the fiscal year to last into the next year, because when they get organized research grants or tuition monies, they want to use those monies immediately. We have hampered them in the past, and in the past they've also gone ahead and used those money to hire a necessary teacher or to start a certain organized program, research program. Now, we had no problem until last year, when rightly so, the Attorney General was concerned about this method of more or less legislation through appropriation bills or legislation through the operation program. And he didn't want to veto the intent, and the suggestion came through that perhaps we should put a bill through and allow it to be done automatically by law. And I think that during the interim, in working with the university, they're really excited about this. The Board of Reason wholeheartedly supports it. The bill had been reduced originally from its intent because we were also had an amendment to original section 1 had to do with interest money to allow them to use their interest money to conduct a program. And in the House finance, we came up into a real legal problem there. And with the suggestion of writing from the Attorney General's office, we felt rather than get hung up on that particular point, and now these three major sections that everyone agrees with to pass in legislation, and we'll work out the interest problem later that they generate from their capital program and other programs.
Any questions?
A couple. One is, Representative Martin, each year there's still going to be an appropriation bill.
Yes, sir.
What you're saying is if X number of dollars are appropriated, but more money even comes in, they're allowed to spend more than what the appropriated amount is.
Yes, the, during the year, the organized research of all campuses, like down in Kenai, for instance, they get certain grants from the oil industries for programs. Well, we had a cumbersome way for the Board of Regents to okay it, and once they okay it, it has to go to legislative and budget and all that during the interim. And then we may not meet for a month or 2 months. In the meantime, the schools hurry to use that money.
I guess,
by the assembly. A liberal set.
Oh, this is only university.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm trying to draw an analogy. So if the school district budget's set, but some grant comes from somebody, they can't spend it. And you can say, well, how come you didn't plan it? They have to go back to the assembly and say, hey, we'd like to be able to spend more than what you have authorized us to spend. Okay, this is on a local level. Here, what I see, though, is it leaves room for, I don't want to say hanky-panky, but I think university got to be better able to estimate where their grants are coming in.
Well,
and it's better to overestimate and find a shortfall and not spend, you know, spend less than what we authorized.
The way that this Tim, the way now, yeah, and they used to do that, and that's what got them in trouble. And so the legislators got real staunch, and we used to have 79 different sections of the budget. Now we do it just per unit. But then within each unit, as the university is growing now, and especially in certain areas, some of them have been able to capitalize more on private grants, research grants, federal monies. You don't always know when those are coming through. Now, the legislative budget and all that has an overriding. See, now we're requiring them to still report those things, but we don't necessarily need to get that permission at the last minute. Some of them are looking for federal grants that they can't put in there. What about if we don't get them? You know, and then it looks inflated. Then the budget
goes. And you're just addressing then grants. This doesn't allow any
intuitions.
Okay, they can't take the capital money and transfer it into operating or any of this kind of
thing. No, sir. And that's where we stop. We're taking other program receipts. Like this year here, we allow the universities to, and the Board of Regents to increase student fees. But we put a gnome on there that each institution keeps their own money. So we don't know, like in Kenai, if they're going to generate more income through student fees, then they will be recipients of their own efforts. Before, it used to go to the state administration, and then they'd be appropriated. So now we allow each unit to keep their own student fee by this legislation.
Okay, then just one other question. In the case of the small community college, they say do increase the tuition. They keep that money. Then what's the assurance, or is there any assurance, of the following year the university administration then says, well, look, if you're going to do that, you're just getting less from the state. So they're back
to saying
that.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, yes, that's the part of the problem there. Number one, the Board of Regents rationalize now that we have the lowest fee in the nation in the world. And so this is making better use of student loan money, so it's really not costing the student anymore. But it will encourage the local community to provide programs that students in that area want and need in a lot of cases. That will come next year's budget. It will be in there automatically. They know that this program was a success. We want to continue that program. And that will automatically be in their program analysis at program receipts due to fees.
I wanted to ask you about Section 1. I understand the desirability of allowing expenditure of program receipts of federal funds, and I think the provision on organized research is desirable, but I am a little uncomfortable about the transfers or changes between objects of expenditures or between allocations. My memory of this was that some senators in the Finance Committee have been concerned about the university not following the letters of intent of the legislature and legislative intent as expressed by statutes. And I think there might be some concern, and I'm open to correction on this, that this language would broaden the authority of the regents to ignore legislative direction unless we went through the business of making more appropriation lines in the university budget and making the university budget more complicated.
Yes, again, it depends, Mr. Chairman, to what degree you're going to trust the university. I think that in the last 4 or 5 years, they have developed a real good relationship, even though there are weaknesses, with the legislators and the Board of Regents and the administration. At least I've found in the last 2 years a tremendous openness, and there is much better accountability as to when we appropriated money and for positions, and are those being fulfilled. Now, in this thing here, yes, you are allowing a little flexibility, which is said in certain campuses to be needed, that there's certain demand, and hopefully we're causing this demand by literally forcing more students to attend units within the state, whether it be our community colleges or be the major units. when they see a flood of students, suddenly we have class so-and-so for some reason, English 301 is a tremendous load here, and we need to transfer some money. And in class so-and-so, it ended up very few attendance. So they need some flexibility within their own units to be able to be flexible to the demand per year, per semester. That's what the hope is here. And of course, they had to go through a scrutiny with the administration and with the Board of Regents. Now also this year, Mr. Chairman, in the university budget, what we did for the first time to help solve that problem is the new positions that were allocated for if the individuals aren't hired, the university will not have the flexibility of using that money for something else. So there's a counter in the new budget this year also.
All right, other questions to Representative Martin on 466?
One question about Carrie, you know, about 8 years ago, I remember some real sleight of hands that went on in the university budget that created probably part of the problem that they have now. What real assurance do we have that will not again raise its head with the adoption of this bill here, this legislation? If you recall probably some of the stuff that went on at that time, I mean, and when the smoke cleared out and the dust settled, they were about $4 million they just couldn't find. And that was where when the legislature got back into their bailiwick again. And this apparently is the first real attempt to kind of loosen up the strings on a little bit. What real assurance do we have that they're not going to be back into the same practice again at a later date?
Stimmon,
Maybe
you explained it, and I missed it. It's a full faith. It was almost $10 million. It was on the accountable for. And this year here, the machinery is much better. I'd say like in the last 3 years that I've been on the subcommittee for the budget, we can tell much better unit by unit who has employees, how many employees they have, how many temps they have, how many part-time, how many full-time they have. We've got it down to nitty-gritty now that they can tell semester by semester. Degree credit hours, full-time students, part-time students. So we have a much better accountability of where monies are going, what we're buying for our dollars, and both the Senate and the House now have the ability to almost month by month to monitor what they have.
You know, this may be a late thing, Mr. Chairman. It might be what we ought to have some DOT people if you're listening to. Perhaps you found the secret to it on this thing, or that the university has, because that's part of our problems. Anytime I see anything that has to do anything with appropriations, from one spot to another, the ability to do it, it makes me nervous as a cat on a hot stove. I just hope that the Regency group will take a real close tab on this thing. We won't be coming back in here in about another 4 years and saying, where is $4 to $10 million? What happened to it? It's happened before. It can't happen again unless we keep a real close look at it.
Okay. I have empathy with your thoughts, and I'm hoping too, because I know I'm on the line trying to promote this, but I really think that we have a good relationship with the new Board of Regents, and they've been open to us for the first time this year. We've been invited to three of their meetings, open meetings, and they've come to the legislators too. I think there's a new harmony there.
Of course, I got another hand on my burr on my saddle too. We got information the other day that one of the good gentleman there in charge at Rodner, I believe it is, said he didn't care whether people were out of a job or the politics of anything anyway. We were talking about the NASA deal. We're losing a lot of jobs in the Fairbanks area due to the university taking over some of that project. So maybe that's why I got a burn on my saddle. Yeah. Like, and I'll withdraw any problems that I have going by.
I just have one further question. As you see the bill, it will take a vote of the Board of Regents anytime there's any kind of transfer. Not just the administration doing it, notifying the regents that they've done.
No, the Board of Regents will be directly involved.
I'm not sure what that really means.
That's better than they were before.
They didn't know that at all before.
Well, it's more
chatter.
Also, Mr. Chairman, for me, the legislative budget and audit will be informed quarterly, so we'll know when new money's coming in, and we'll be able to oversee it. And tell you the committee is pretty conscientious when we say university money.
If I might, I guess we both got off on the same side of the business or something.
Yeah.
But I, you know, being around school administrators and that, it's just, too often, whether it be in Puerto Rico.
Different beds, though.
I guess my problem is, Representative Martin, which, oftentimes we have people who are board, on the board, they really don't fulfill their functions as a board would. And too often they're led down the path by saying that, well, if we're paying $100,000, we got to take this person's advice and just go with it. Mm-hmm. And that's what bothers me with anything. That's why I said, even though they do vote, they still may say, well, what's your recommendation, and never put a check into it. But that's neither here nor there. But somehow maybe we need to make sure board members live up to be board members. And not be afraid to say no to a chief school administrator. But as long as they have to vote at least for some check.
And to tell you something, it seems like this last year they are really conscientious. A lot of them got good reputations. They went to the night too at the region. I think there's a lot more conscientious.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My door's always open to you.
Thank you, sir.
We have another witness on this bill. Merrick Huffer from the original last year.
Senator Joseph, can I respond to Senator Fisher's comments? I think the border regions has exhibited a new and sometimes difficult interest in the various units of the university, and they're spending a great deal of time, given that they're a voluntary board, but they're spending a great deal of time pursuing the fiscal and managerial aspects of the university. In fact, they've been very tightly involved in the selection of the president, and part of what they're looking for is someone that they can provide policy for and not just sit back and listen. I think you'll see a new interaction between the Board of Regents and the university and the Board of Regents and the legislature.
Correct? Before you begin,
I'm Merritt Helfrich.
Yes.
And I'm assistant to the chancellor at the University of Western Fairbanks.
Could I inquire, before you begin whatever prepared statement, and would that be all right?
Sure.
You're looking at, I guess, 370708E, section 1 of this bill. And apparently, the existing law says that transfers or changes between objects of expenditures or between allocations may be made by the head of a state agency upon approval of the division. No transfer may be made between appropriations except as provided in an act making the transfer between appropriations. Now, that subsection applies to the university today.
Yes, I believe it
does. So, you already have the authority to make changes between allocations at the university level without coming to the legislature, it appears to me.
Let me back up on what I said. I'm not sure that this particular language refers. There may be some confusion between the university and other state agencies, and perhaps Representative Martin could.
What is the present practice?
The present practice is that expenditures, transfers have been made. In certain cases, we have to come back to the legislative budget office and request changes. The problem with that is that for instance, if funds are necessary for a particular activity, it may take a long period of time, up to 2 months, before we can get the authority to do that, and it's caused a great deal of problem. For instance, if for instance there's a great increase in student enrollment in a particular school, and we need to hire a whole bunch of temporary employees, teachers, in order to accommodate that, or more contractual funds are necessary in order to support that particular activity, and they're necessary at the beginning of the semester, the delay becomes a real problem. And so this would change the law so that the Board of Regents could approve that change, but it would be in accordance with the principles that they reported to the Office of Management and Budget.
Do you know what the position of the co-chairs of the Senate Finance Committee on this is?
No, I don't.
Mr.
Chairman, I might point out on line 17 and 18, they're still under certain conditions. Transfers may not be made between appropriations except as provided in an act making the transfer between appropriations. In other words, you still got to have a bill of some sort to move certain appropriations.
It's the difference between appropriations.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that would mean that no transfers could be made at the present time between University of Alaska Juneau and University of Alaska Anchorage. But it could be made between the University of Alaska Fairbanks and organized research.
Sorry, we appropriate to a campus. And I think we would certainly not want you to make transfers from campus to campus without our knowing about it, because we fight competitively, and when those fights are resolved at this level, we don't want to be upset by.
I'm sure the University of Alaska Fairbanks would not like it either.
Do you know what OMB's procedure would be, or what they would require?
No, I do not.
Like, the bill has a further referral to the Finance Committee. Do you have anything else?
No, I didn't. I was going to speak specifically. I had expected someone else from the university to come and speak to this, but I wondered if in fact, there were any questions concerning the area of organized research. I could speak with a great deal more knowledge on that.
Yes. Have you resolved the problem raised by Patrick O'Rourke in the letter to Senator Sackett of May 4 concerning organized research?
I don't believe so.
Well, perhaps we'll talk about that another time.
Chairman, I just want to ask a question. Maybe it doesn't even tie into this, but research can be carried over to the next year. It doesn't go back into the excess fund, does not go back into the general fund.
I believe that under this particular circumstance, this would make what's happened here legal. We get an appropriation for organized research in a certain dollar amount, and a proposal is written to some federal agency, and after a period of time, they either approve it or disapprove it. If it's approved, it may come in on June 1st and be for a period of 3 years. And as I understand it, the way the law reads now, the same money which came in on a particular contract to do a particular work, or from the state, has to be reappropriated again in the next session for the same contract. And what's being asked for here is, if in fact we get an appropriation for a certain dollar amount and then get a contract for a 3-year period, say, we can carry out that particular contract for the duration.
3 years. Okay.
Yeah, for the duration in the amount of the contract.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go back over these then. Senator Moss, we had heard on House Bill 354, we didn't have a quorum at that time. There was no oral testimony be presented. This was Representative Cronin's proposal, and apparently at the present time, when a hospital revokes or suspends a doctor's hospital privileges for more than 30 days or even a brief period of time, there's no channel of communication from that action to the medical board, which has disciplinary power over physicians. The bill would require the hospital to give the board notification of suspensions or revocations that exceed more than 30 days.
I'll move the bill.
Senator Fisher moves the report. The CS for HB 354 ended without objection. CSHB 384. This bill would require that annual audits be performed to identify or assure that monies have been spent by school districts in compliance with the school district's own bylaws. And would disallow school employees from earning money in addition to their salaries for lobbying activities. And I think that we might wish to clarify that and bring a substitute to make sure that this does not inadvertently prohibit reimbursement for out-of-pocket expenses that the employee incurs. Another section requires that the contracts of school chief school administrators, superintendents, be open to the public, and that copies of the records of the contract be sent to the Department of Education, and that if a school board wishes to buy out, settle up, terminate a school administrator, that the Commissioner of Education is given an opportunity to make an advisory opinion and has 10 days to respond to the proposed settlement, and the board must give 30 days time to consider the issue of submission.
Aren't we getting back into a sort of an SOS operation again there? The fact that we're giving the Commission of Education the opportunity to influence the local school board?
You raised the very question I would raise.
I mean, that's the first thing that pops in my mind here. If we won't ever read, we may have a problem there with the reintroduction of some of the first steps going back into state operated school system type.
Mr. Hull is here from the Department of Education, Senator Moss. Steve, do you have to talk to this? Let me say something, Steve, that just occurs to me. I have had the experience of representing IAAs, and in a couple cases, advising the school board about settlement with chief school administrators. And in a couple of occasions, I represented chief school administrators in those situations vis-a-vis school boards. These school districts are advised, boards are advised by their attorneys. And in some respects, the issue of whether the settlement should be made or not may be more a legal question as to what the liability of the district would be if they don't settle, or whether there's cause to terminate. That really is an educational question for the commissioner to pass upon from here. I would almost suggest that maybe it's the attorney general who ought to give advice more than the commissioner of education in this particular setting.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Holt from the Department of Education. Let me first of all apologize for being...
That's why it does not appear there. The folks advocating for that provision is the School Board Association, and as I recall, the representative of the teachers felt very strongly that the commissioner ought to be involved. It's my view that it may be more reasonable for the commissioner's involvement to be permissive or upon the request of a local board. As I recall, the rationale for requiring them to get involved is that in some instances, boards either do not avail themselves of legal counsel or are suspicious of it because of pre-existing relationships between the superintendent and the lawyer to the school board.
That could be true.
And that, as I recall, is why this mandatory requirement is there.
Usually the lawyer or the district has more day-to-day contact with the superintendent than anybody else.
That's correct.
But the question as to whether it's a good deal or not to buy out depends on someone's prediction as to what would happen if you terminated the contract. Could the superintendent sue, and what would the court say? And would the court say that he was negligent, violated rules of professional conduct? You know, I mean, you get into all those things. And so for the commissioner to make an appropriate judgment, the commissioner would have to have more than just the record of employment. The commissioner might have to know, he might even have to investigate some of the surrounding circumstances. Does the Department of Education want to get into that? Where you have to go to Fort Yukon or someplace to find out who did what to whom?
Yeah.
Let me first answer your question.
Before you do that, let me just give you an example. Suppose the situation arose in the Matsu situation now.
Okay.
And the question was whether the contract of Gordon Pope should be bought out. I suppose they reached an agreement. Because it seems to me the commissioner would almost have to know the whole history about the school principal and the tires and the whole works to make an intelligent judgment.
The answer to the question is no, we don't want to get involved in those kinds of things. The other side of that is that it's my understanding that the language here is couched in such a way as to provide two safeguards. One is that against a district board making an uninformed, rash decision to buy out the contract of the chief school administrator for more than is necessary or advisable. That's why the commissioner gets involved. The other safeguard is the 30-day requirement, which forecloses on that rash judgment. So there are two things at work. One is a third-party opinion that the board may accept or reject. The other is the 30-day requirement that boards spend some time thinking about.
What the commissioner could do is to tell the board the department has received 7 situations like this, and in 4 of them, settlements at least this generous seem to be the pattern. I mean, he could maybe comment whether that's worse in terms of what the general buyout pattern is.
To the extent, Mr. Chairman, I would have to make a recommendation to my commissioner on this kind of issue. I guess I would have to view it from two different perspectives. One is the legal requirements or potential liabilities facing the court. And on those issues, obviously, I'm not confident to comment. The other is, do they have to do this, or is it of their own volition? And I guess that's a question that local boards have to answer. I think, to some extent, this might be going, might be using too big a weapon for the offense, and that is in response to a situation which occurred in, I believe it was the Lower Kuskokwim School District, in which the board bought out the superintendent for a whole bunch of money that a lot of people thought was too much under the circumstances. I don't know how frequently those exigencies occur, and to what extent there's a need for this kind of thing in statute.
Maybe Senator Moss's point is well taken, that we take something happens and is unusual and we change the law, but are we taking a step backwards in time towards the SOS philosophy? Is the next thing going to be that we'll have advice on the collective bargaining agreements that the REA makes? You know, that's what some of it may sense from the
this this is where I'm concerned, because I see as to the back, not only are we working on the REAs in this case here, but we're starting to tell, if you may continue, Mr. Chairman, we're starting to tell your municipal and your urban school districts that they got to do this, this, and this. And I don't believe that, that Matsu or some of the other school districts are going to sit still for what we're faced with here. I just believe we've got some bad legislation coming up here. As far as local people and local school districts are concerned, I think we're usurping the power of the local school district. But I don't have the final answer on this thing, but I just have a heartburn on it, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, what would happen if the commissioner recommends if you don't settle? Suppose the commissioner recommends don't settle with this guy. You're perfectly within your rights, and he's breached his contract, and there shouldn't be any financial compensation. And the superintendent sues and wins. So then where are we? Does the state, does the district have a claim against the state for bum advice? Or, I'm not asking it facetiously, but
I understand your question, Mr. Chairman, and I tend to agree with you that with the responsibility goes the liability. That's why I would prefer to see this kind of advice upon request rather than mandatory. And even then, there is the question of liability. And you're the attorney, so you're in a much better position to answer that question than I am.
I guess I can see where you're coming from, but I'm looking at the John Q. Public, who, and I'm also looking at state dollars. And my concern is that somehow this thing has got to be passed on just for the publicity of it, if nothing else, so that more and more people become aware of what's happening. Because I, quite frankly, hate to see superintendents the way they're doing it nowadays. They come in, they'll get a 3-year contract, which is fine, but they renew it each year, they extend a year, so they get themselves into a position where they know somewhere down the line they're going to have some kind of conflict with the board, and they're going to be bought off. And there is no law saying that you have to wait until the ending of that 3rd year to renew it. So they're getting smart. They're just keeping it open, so they always have a 3-year contract. I mean, I would be satisfied even if there's some kind of a compromise whereby at least the commissioner is always informed of a buyback or a buyout, so that there is some, if you want to call it accountability, or there's something there so that school administrator knows if the state somewhere has the documentation, so if he goes for another job or something, that people will know he was bought out and he's in the terms of being bought out. That's my concern. I think it's got to be publicity, you know, some kind of a...
Something else.
I
sent
it to me. We did major recommendation here came directly from the School Board Association in 1982. I don't have my following, but I remember specifically Mr. Holtney had. That's what we picked up in our negotiations. And we were working with the major sponsor of the bill. Ironically, it says Representative Tinsley, but it's really Senator Holtney's bill that he introduced last year. And then somehow ever it ended up being a House bill. And when we got into the Finance Committee, I was working hard in the glove with Senator Ferguson's office. That's where we got most of my information from, to extend it from one case, the Mr. Holman case up in his area, to a multitude of problems that the school boards have experienced. experience over the years that we picked up the recommendations that they had for DOE in their association meetings.
Well, I would like to make some suggestions for a change, I think, which would be essentially to say that on line two, that the school board may submit a copy of the agreement to the commissioner. Period. If the agreement is submitted, the commissioner shall be afforded an opportunity to submit an advisory opinion and recommendations to the school board. And complete that sentence. And then a settlement agreement will not be entered into by a school board until 40 days after the commissioner, until the 40 days after the agreement has been submitted to the commissioner. That would allow the commissioner to demur and say, I don't know enough about this situation, and I know there's a conflict here, but I can't really render an opinion on the underlying dispute. Or to render advice if you want to. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, all due respect, I think if the school board takes the step of asking the commissioner, or sending it to the commissioner ought to be required to respond, even if it's only to tell that board that it might be in its best interest to contact its own legal counsel. If the board feels at such a loss that it has to ask someone from outside the district, I think somebody ought to respond to that.
But this says that he shall submit an advisory opinion and recommendation.
I understand that.
Suggests that he's advising them to do this or do that.
Well, the recommendation, Mr. Chairman, could be in the form of telling them to get a lawyer, if nothing else. But it does require the commissioner to act in response to the board's request. And I think, much as I would like to have the department not get involved in that, I think that is a very important point.
You don't object, though, to making it permissive to the school board?
No, sir, I don't object.
Whether to trigger this procedure.
Well, you know what created this whole thing? A trip to London, a few other expenses by a particular superintendent with a lobbying contract and large sums there. But that was still, and as far as I'm concerned, it's not right. We also had two deals in the Yukon Flats area, where we had the same situation where they bought off two superintendents up there. You bought off one or two out in the western part of the state, you bought off two up there. But maybe it was a bad judgment issue or something like that caused the problem. But the people did it, and I might go back to the Mat-Su deal. In the Mat-Su area down here, if these people fire that superintendent, and he comes back to court, for example, he's fired by as a result of an advisory deal by the state school superintendent. And that man goes back to court and he wins his case. Who pays the bill there? Is it going to be the school district, part of the appropriation? Is it going to be the taxpayer in the local area that's going to increase their taxes to pay it off, or what? It's a part of the problem that I have. So that's what's called. But say it again.
A couple other cases why this is important. You may remember last year, we turned down a couple of IFPs when the budget had called in. And one of them had to beat the $100,000 to that school district when it took payoff. And one was another one I got set up in the Northwest, because that was the decision of their own. And so if the state and DOE and the legislature would be responsible for these decisions, I think that we may solve a lot of problems by those school boards having the advantage of DOE giving advice to them, because here we finally turned them down, and then also when they had the 55% law, and they come in with requests for revised programs, we okay it, and we in the state, they're okaying all those IFPs. It's only last year that we finally stopped, because we realized that too many local boards were doing things that were unusual, and here we're paying the bill, we're bailing them out, only because they sent in a revised program.
Well, Mr. Paul, there is a problem in making it permissive that I just thought about, which is that you have an unsophisticated board, which I guess is part of what this is aimed at, although a sophisticated board would be covered too. You might have an attorney and a school superintendent confronting the board saying, and the board saying, we want the advice of the commissioner, and the attorney saying, if you do that, we're going to sue you right now, and you know, you resign now, or face the consequences, and the board might be intimidated.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, you could make it permissive, but impose a mandatory cooling off period that may or may not address that concern.
Well, you could do this. You could require that the proposed agreement be made public, and that it be in
be public for 10 working days, so that there would be that cooling before it could be executed, and public comment could be obtained, and then we could make permissive the submission of the commission.
That's an okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll point out something here. This whole piece of legislation here, in a sense, is special interest legislation. It's aimed primarily at the REAs. It's there. All the things that they're concerned about is, in a sense, taken care of here, and it pulls their handle back. But people in the urban school districts had better keep an eye on this piece of legislation. They're not going to be running their schools either. Before it's over, this is the first step. This is how we got into the cotton-picking SOS business in the first place that we fought for about 7 or 8 years to get out of. It's something to consider. I'm going to put a recommendation of do not pass on this, but I want to pass it out of committee if we do it. But I just want you to know where I stand on this thing.
Well, I'd share your view. I think you have a big problem with it. You're very farsighted. The difficulty is that the executive director of the school administrators association who says, "No sweat. This has good features." So you and I, we're defending those who don't seem to care about it.
Let me ask you a question. If I were to come to the DOE now and say, I want a list of all the contracts we bought up in this program in the last 2 years, could you provide me with that list in terms of the bought up to buy out?
At this time?
Yeah, if I were to ask you right now. So there isn't any way that John Q. Public or a representative of John Q. Public could get a pulse on what's happening throughout the state. I'm not talking just the world. I'm talking Kenai, Kodiak, or whatever.
That's correct.
Okay, and I guess this is my concern. I want it to be somewhere logged. I don't care whether the commissioner comes back with an advisory opinion or not. Somewhere that people can go and look and say, my God, we paid $100,000.
All right.
When we really got shit.
Well, let's do this. Let's require that the document, the proposed agreement, be made a public record in the district for 10 days. Require that a copy be sent to DOE. Require a copy be sent. And permit the board, when it tenders the document, permit the board at its option to request advice from the commissioner. All right, so there's a central law of what's going on in these situations. And we'll work that through.
Okay. May I make one comment, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
For the record, the impetus for this bill, as I recall in the discussions with the teachers and the School Board Association, arose as much from city and borough problems as REAA problems. It isn't all one or all the other. It's a mixed bag.
What's your position relative to the Ferguson Amendment to require that the school administrator have his offices within the district and provide restrictions on state support if that isn't done?
Well, I presume you're talking about the proposed amendments F and G, and then a new section that says restriction on state support. Are we reading from the same music?
Yes.
Obviously, the state board has not had a chance to look at these. My personal view, I don't have a personal view on F and G. I think those are policy questions that somebody has to call. My fear on the second section, Mr. Chairman, is that as in all such instances, if there is a penalty, it's going to be imposed on the kids. All we do is take money away from the district to reduce funds available, and the board, in its volition and at its own instance, may simply pass those reductions along to the instructional programs.
Well, is there a problem? This is designed to meet the issue of a pollution chain. Does the department have a view as to whether that is maladministration to have the superintendent in Anchorage, or is it a good use of efficiency and good use of his time to be there because he's centrally located?
Five people were elected that made that decision.
And they made the decision that it's okay for you.
Evidently.
All right.
The question I have, Mr. Chairman, is you could physically locate the central office anywhere you want within the district, but it doesn't mean anything because the staff's going to be in Anchorage anyhow. So even though you require them to locate, quote, the legal office in within the school district, finance man and everybody else.
Well, Senator Ferguson's amendment says that you can't pay the superintendent if you spend more than 25% of his working days.
Okay, but you're, again, though, you're only talking here to chief school administrator.
Yeah, but
you're not addressing the rest of it.
but in this case, he's all alone up there with the secretary and Andrew.
I don't believe that's true, Mr. Jackson.
He used to have an aide. He doesn't have one.
You're talking about Brower.
There is an assistant superintendent. At least. There are also itinerant folks, as I understand it, in the areas of special ed. And I think they have somebody called a head teacher that travels around and assists.
My inclination is that this is nothing for us to get involved in. I don't know why.
This is another, the amendment deal is another one of the things that has some heartburn. We're nailing down things that, in a sense, are part of the local school board's rights to do and handle.
Is the district aware that this amendment is pending?
Of course, I suspect there's another little facet to this thing, too. Whenever one of the school district offices moved out of Nome down to Unifleet. They moved out of Unifleet down to, out of Nome down to Unifleet, which is out of the district. Anyway,
there's a Nome City district and there's a Bering Straits district. Bering Straits district moved to Unifleet.
From Nome to Unifleet, but both situations are okay.
I suspect, though, I can't help but say it, it's created some of this trouble. But this thing right here, I don't know where Frank's coming from on it, other than Brower's Dick's outfit there, and it shouldn't really matter that much because you're only looking at one or two people total.
Okay. All right, did you have any other comments, Mr. Brower?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, these proposed amendments, notwithstanding, the state board approves the concepts of the bill.
All right. Let me work on a proposed committee substitute following this discussion, I think without the first committee. Does the bill have a deferred finance committee?
Mr. Chairman, I might say, I'm not going to try to stop the bill from moving. That's not the point.
Right.
The point is, I just want you to know I've got heartburn over it, and I think they're looking for more trouble than we want to solve.
Well, we won't act on it today. We'll bring it back Friday with the CS. But let's try to act on 466. This is the university bill that we considered earlier.
Senator Martin, Mr. Chair, was your approach right there when you came in?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
I've got a problem with it.
I will
agree with
your recommendation.
Objection carried
none.
We will
report your country.
CSHB 466.
You have to get a 3-year country.
No other business but to stand adjourned.
No, it's down to keep up with that.
Well, I know. I know.
I don't like to see it.
I know.